Hello, I'm Guillermina Gonzalez, Executive Director of the Delaware Arts Alliance, your host for today. And with me, I have Brad Erickson, theater playwright and Executive Director of the Theater Bay Area in San Francisco. Brad, thank you for having the time for us.
Happy to be here.
And since you're becoming kind of a celebrity in the theater world, you've been a celebrity in the theater world, but more the last, for the last, say, couple of years, last time we talked, you were in the process of developing a very interesting play. So bring us up to speed in the many things that you've been doing for the last, say, couple of years.
Well, yes, we were. That's right. The play was in rehearsal, I think, when we spoke last time. So that play was American Dream, El Sueño mm-hmm. del Otro Lado, which went on to its world premiere performance here in San Francisco at New Conservatory Theater. I have to say, really, really not only great reviews, but just, which it had, but a really strong response from the audience. It was a story that takes place on the border in San Diego. It had a lot to do with both border issues, but also kind of a border being both a physical reality dividing countries, but also a more kind of metaphorical image as well of the individual characters in the play crossing over from one side to another in their own lives. And so that was a really great great success, and looks like it's going to have another production in Tucson, which will be exciting with a theater company down there, and actually a theater company in Mexico in San Miguel de Allende, which is where part of the play takes place, looking at it as well. So that would be interesting. And then last year, right about this time, I was away for a month at a wonderful artist community called Jurassic, about 30 miles or so outside of San Francisco in the Santa Cruz Mountains, and had a month there and was able to write the book and lyrics to a new musical, which the working title right now is 80, the musical. It is about being 80 plus, and the sort of what that does to individuals who are approaching that age, and what it does to families. And I have to say, it is less than loosely based upon my own parents and our own experience of dealing with aging or not dealing with aging, as it is.
Excellent. So you've been extremely busy, creatively speaking. So I was talking to you not long ago. Mm-hmm. And reflecting on theater as a discipline. And I thought, who better than Brad Erickson, who is a playwright, who's been there, done that, not only from the writing piece, but also directing theater. So why don't you bring us up to speed in terms of what's out there, what's happening with the discipline, where is the discipline going? Please tell us.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think there's sort of three things that I see happening, and I wonder how they're, in some ways they're connected, in some ways maybe they're separate. But I think that both artists are dealing with and the field as a whole. Mm-hmm. One is using technology, and so I think that we're seeing more and more productions of all kinds incorporating technology into the production. And so whereas this, it actually was rather controversial even maybe 10 years ago. So we're seeing people use projections. We're seeing video and film being incorporated into productions, and sometimes even with plays that aren't necessarily, I mean, even maybe with more classic plays that certainly wouldn't have, where the author would not have necessarily called for it. And I think that this has gone, I think whatever controversy there was around the appropriateness of using projections and of using video or film in a live performance, we seem to be well beyond that. I'm seeing it at, you know, we're seeing it at, you know, sort of very mainstream large theaters like the Goodman Theater in Chicago, or at American Conservatory Theater here in San Francisco. Certainly we've been seeing it for quite a while in some of the smaller and more experimental theaters. And so that seems to be a pretty big change just in terms of the way that we are, the way that the field is using projections, video, and film. And I think that some of us thought, and I was one of them, was sort of worrying that there's something that's mesmerizing about a screen, right? I mean, look at everyone who is looking at their screens in their hands all day long. And so I think there were a number of us who were sort of afraid, like, well, if we put a moving image up, you know, on the stage, are people going to pay any attention to the live actor? And I think that's not proving to be such a worry, that the live actor actually does, it can work well, that
okay.
The live actor can hold his or her own alongside the screen with a moving image. So not only just sort of still images that often take the place maybe of a set or incorporated into the set, but actually moving images or the way that live actors will sometimes will respond to and be in dialogue with, you know, filmed actors and moving images on a screen, and that actually seems to work. So that's been, I think, a really interesting change that we're seeing again across the board from small experimental companies to much larger, more mainstream companies. That's a big change. And I think we were both in Chicago together a couple weeks ago, and I was interested to go see a new play they were doing at the Goodman that was incorporating what we call tweet seats. I'd heard about these and had never experienced it myself, and this is something that other disciplines have been using for quite some time. So classical music and ballet, opera, where they don't tell people to turn off their smartphones. In fact, they actually encourage you to keep them on and be participating in dialogue in some way, receiving information, responding to the work that's happening live in front of you through your smartphone. So that's what they were doing at the Goodman a few weeks ago, and I was eager to see how that worked. And I have to say, other than tweeting that I was there, I then said not another thing throughout the entire play until it was over, and I went, brava. So I don't know. I don't know I cannot judge based upon one experience, but I know we're working with
it
a lot.
But what about those surrounding you? Were they doing the exact same thing, just tweeting at the beginning?
I was expecting to see little blue screens, you know, all around me, and I think everyone that I noticed was doing the same thing I did, which was to, you know, check in on Facebook or Twitter and say that they were there, and then after that, nothing else. So I think, you know, there is a fear in the theater that the tweet seats will be distracting to people around them, A, and then B, that maybe it's not appropriate for a narrative art form like theater, which moves pretty fast. And it might, at least that was my experience with the play at the Goodman. I mean, it was one I had to pay attention. And so I don't think that I just felt like I couldn't leave paying attention to the play to go think of something to write in 140 characters and then and come back, because I would have missed stuff, which I think maybe in a symphony or in a more slowly moving opera where things are sung, you maybe have a moment to be able to engage in that way, whereas in a fast-moving play, you just kind of have to hold on to your seat and pay attention.
So,
that was at least my experience. We're experimenting with it. I do applaud the Goodman for trying it, because then so many theaters are so frightened of it. And the play did not come to a halt because people kept their phones on. So
that is not the case.
Let's experiment with it. Let's see what happens, and, you know, we'll learn more as we keep experimenting.
There you go. Well, that's a good aspect of new trends. Now, when it comes to narrative, what in your experience is the kind of place that people tend to go, and what are the characteristics of that audience?
Well, you know, I think it's an interesting question. I mean, I think we're seeing in the theater that one of the trends that has been mounting over the last several years is something that is called devised work, which is a play that comes into creation not just from one writer, a playwright, but that is created through an ensemble, collectively. Now, it is generally, I mean, these things are sort of, they do get written down, and there becomes a set script, so it's not that the thing is improvised every night in a different way all the way through. but it is a group of people working together under with a director and an ensemble of actors and probably a team, you know, a writer or a team of writers that are sort of recording and amalgamating what is coming out of this. So that's something that we're seeing more and more of. And oftentimes, this devised work will be created. And now Cornerstone is doing this a lot in Los Angeles, and Michael Rhodes is experimenting with this in Oregon and others, where you base the work out of the experience and the input of an entire community. So Lee Fondakowski did this as well with the Laramie Project when she took her company to Laramie, Wyoming after Matthew Shepard's murder, and then followed it up with, she went back again 10 years later to go experiment and see what had happened. And so this sort of work that is being created by multiple authors, so to speak, that I think is a trend that, you know, you would not have seen really, certainly not 50 years ago. And I, you know, it's not like it's brand new, but I think it's, you're seeing it become more and more,
more prevalent
across
these
the
days.
Country. Yeah. So that's a trend that's happening as well. And I, you know, I think it's interesting. I'm, you know, certainly there's narrative, and then there's less, you know, there's pieces that are not so based upon narrative, and I think people think that younger audiences are more interested in pieces that are have less of a straightforward narrative, but I don't know that that's the case. I think that younger audiences respond to plays that deal with either topics or people that are like them, and I think that that's true of all, you know, of all different kinds of diversities. I will say, I mean, I think the theater field is really, really grappling with the issues of inclusion and looking at the typical theater-going audience, which still tends to be middle class, middle-aged, and Caucasian.
Hold on to that thought.
You know, all across the country, that tends to be true, right?
Right.
I think that we know that that's the demographics in this country are not going in that direction. You know, the country is becoming increasingly diverse.
Correct.
And the field is really grappling with, you know, how do we include voices of, you know, of diverse writers? And I will say it's interesting. Some of the most exciting playwrights in this country are young writers of color. And so I find that to be extremely exciting and encouraging. And they're being produced by some of the largest theaters in the country. But still, the audiences tend to be white, affluent, and middle-aged. So I'm not quite sure when the audiences catch up with the playwrights and the work on stage, but I know that we're trying, that the field is very, very, I think, authentically concerned and engaged about making sure that we're not only speaking to one sliver of America, but that we're actually, you know, we're actually reaching the entire spectrum. Exactly.
Let me just re-engage with the audience real quick. To let them know that you are tuned into News Radio 1450 WILM and 1410 WDOV for the Delaware State of the Arts Radio Show. We are very fortunate to have today Brad Erickson, theater playwright, and also the executive director of the Theater Bay Area in San Francisco, who is donating time from San Francisco. For you, it's very early in the morning kind of thing, Brad, so we appreciate your time and talents and bringing
us up
to speed in terms of theater. So there's a disconnection in between playwriters of different kinds and the audiences that are attending theater. Let's try to figure out a way of, you tell us, what is your hypothesis?
You know, there's a number of things. So I just was thinking of, like, you know, I just mentioned some of the most exciting writers. And so three of them come to mind who are, you know, young writers of color. Terrell McCraney, just saw another new play of his here in the Bay Area called Choir Boy. Rajiv Joseph, Katori Hall, all of these, you know, are young writers who are becoming produced all around the country by major nonprofit theaters, and in Rajiv Joseph's case, even on Broadway. And that's really, really exciting. And yet, as they get produced in these larger theater, the audiences still tend to be white and affluent and middle class. I mean, I just went to go see another of Terrell's new plays at Berkeley Repertory Theater in Berkeley here. And, you know, the audience looked like their usual audience. And,
the usual
and that was a little strange. And I know that they were really, you know, hoping that the audience would be much, you know, that they would have really withdrawn in the African-American community. And for some reason, it didn't happen. And I don't know why that is. It might be because, you know, subscribers, especially in successful large nonprofit theater companies, can be as much as two-thirds of the audience because they're the subscribers. So that can be a barrier. There's just a lot of those people are already in the seats because they already bought their tickets. So that's maybe
Well, that could be the case. And in occasions, it seems that the price is preventing younger audiences from attending because they consider that a ticket that might be $30, $40 is not necessarily cheap.
Or 50 or 80. You know, I do think that price can be a barrier. And, you know, especially for younger audiences, that's absolutely true. And so, you know, it's interesting too, then there's even just marketing. I mean, with the Goodman and its tweet seats, you know, they were $10. So certainly price was not a barrier.
Right.
But I was expecting that, and I think I bet they were hoping that it was going to draw a young audience up there. But, you know, as far as I could tell, nobody looked to be under 40 in the tweet seats. So, you know, I don't know if that's just a factor of marketing. I'm not sure what it is. But, I mean, price was not the issue.
Well, that was not the case. Now, in your many interactions across the country, you travel a lot for theater purposes. When you talk to younger directors or younger playwriters and maybe audiences that you have the chance to interact with, what do they tell you, which is in a different spin talking to the potential audiences that are not necessarily coming? What do you hear?
Well, I think young artists and just because young people in this country tend to be they're more diverse than people who are older, so there's a lot of young and diverse artists, and even, you know, young white artists are intensely interested in reaching a different demographic and really reaching everybody. And there's a new phrase that instead of sort of diversifying the audience or diversifying the work or diversifying the artist, the word is called normalizing, and I really like that. This is what the normal world, let's make the world on stage and the world and the people in the audience look like the rest of America look normal, which is not 85% white and 50 years and plus. So, I mean, that is not what America looks like. It's not what the world looks like. And I think we talking about it in terms of normalizing is just an interesting way of looking at it. And there's intense interest among artists to reach, you know, reach their own communities and reach, you know, all of the communities in the country. And I think some of them feel maybe that they're not being as supported as they would like by the sort of established powers in the larger in the theater community. I think though that speaking to the theater leaders, they too are intensely interested in this. And so I don't know whether it's that the strategies we're using are not working, or I'm not quite sure what the problem is, because I actually believe that the field really wants to change and to reach these different audiences, and still we keep struggling.
What is
to
the
make change?
And maybe the question is asking potential audiences that are not necessarily in favor of theater, what is the thing that attracts them? It's a marketing research one-on-one asking to the potential audiences, how do I engage you?
Well, you know, again, from what I've seen and heard is that, you know, I think audiences of all different types come if the work is resonating with them. If there's something about it that makes me feel like that's something I want to go see. And I'm not saying that people only want to see stories about people who are exactly like themselves, because I think that's just kind of boring. It's not what we do at the movies. But there needs to be But somehow there needs to be a feeling that this, the, whatever it is that the theater is producing, mm-hmm. is going to move me in some way, right? I'm going to be drawn in, engaged. I'm going to want to see this because mm-hmm. it's a story that'll mean something to me.
Motivates. And
that seems simple, but it mm-hmm. really, you know, when I go to theater that is either performed by younger artists mm-hmm. or written by a younger artist and the company is led by younger artists, mm-hmm. the audiences are younger. I mean, and the work is speaking to them and they pull them in the room. When the work is, you know, about not about that and not mm-hmm. produced by artists like that, then mm-hmm. then it tends to not be the case. And, mm. you know, it's perfectly fine. Look, we've got a theater that, you know, tends to draw in people who are 60 plus. That's awesome. I mean, mm-hmm. that's kind of who the artistic, you know, leadership was for mm-hmm. years and years. It was started by a woman when she was in her 60s,
well,
you know, and
sense.
That's her community, and they do work that resonates with mm-hmm. that community, and that's terrific. I don't think we want to be saying, oh, we don't want to see, you know, people over 55 in our theaters. I think mm-hmm. we just don't want to see at every single theater only people who are 55 plus.
That's a good point. And
right.
Brad, we've been learning so much from you as always. And guess what? We're almost running out of time. So if people want to connect with you in the few minutes left, how can they reach out to you?
I'm available via email, which is really simple. It's Brad at the name of my company, theaterbayarea.org. And we spell theater the British way, R-E.
There you go. And with that, I have to thank you again for so much knowledge. We almost don't have enough time to talk to you to kind of catch up with theater trends. So probably for another round, we need to bring you back so we can keep on learning. Thank you, Brad.
Thanks, Kirmina.
Bye-bye.
Bye.